Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Text message as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. Payne and Pendergast with you. I know y'all's power is usually reserved for the Astros, but how about we hex someone for this game? Okay, and for those who don't know, for those who are new to the program, during the postseason in Major League Baseball, Seth and I, to great success, have hexed opposing players. One player per game, Payne and Pendergast hex. And it works out a lot of the times.
The hex has been the success rate was somewhere north of 90%. It didn't work out this year.
Yeah.
But
I don't know the exact number, but yeah, somewhere north of
90%. No, totally, it's over 90%.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. There was one time I damned somebody to hell. Mm. I can't remember who it was.
Did it work?
Probably, you know, they're probably sweating it out right now.
Right.
They're just wondering, like, it's been 5 years. I'm like, well, you've got an eternity to go, my friend.
That's it.
Sorry about it.
Better get used to it. So we can do whatever we want. We can hex. I will tell you this. We've got a loaded show stacked up here. We got Circle of Swarm coming up in about 18 minutes. Carrington Harrison from our sister station in Kansas City joins us at 8, but we will exercise past playoff demons in the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to do this.
Hey, can I ask you a real quick question?
Absolutely.
Since you're a Catholic, supposedly.
Okay. Yeah.
So with the Catholics, do you go to purgatory and then heaven or hell, or is it that like purgatory is the bad one and you just might have to spend a long time in purgatory?
No, I think I think you end up going one way or the other. And I'm basically
So you have to go to most people have to go to purgatory regardless, but then you go on to your final destination.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that maybe like purgatory was the worst that it would be, and that you would have that chance to. But there was no certain hell.
I'm certain we'll get corrections on this if I'm wrong. I'm basing my entire purgatory take on Paulie Walnut's explanation of purgatory when talking to Chrissy on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Like when Chrissy almost died, and he thought he like crossed over and then he came back and he said it was really hot there. Chrissy said that, or no, he didn't say it was hot. He said I was there and every day I got whacked the same way that I got hit, you know, I got shot or whatever.
Okay.
And Paulie's like, oh, you didn't go to hell, you went to purgatory, my friend. Hell is hot. It would have been hot if you were there. He's like, no, this is how it works in purgatory. You take all your mortal sins, you multiply them by 30. You take all your venial sins and multiply them by 25. And that's the number of years you spend in purgatory.
But I know the years in purgatory are different than earth years, too. I got to do some reading on this before this game.
He goes, I figure I could do like 6,000 years in purgatory, which is like, I could do that standing on my head. That's like 10 years in regular times. So yeah, the answer probably is I don't know, but
the text line is already full of responses. Let's move on to football.
Let's do it. Let's do football here. All right, let's get to some of the thoughts on the Kansas City side. What are they saying over in Kansas City about the Houston Texans, specifically about C.J. Stroud? Chris Jones, as we mentioned in the six pack today, is a huge key to this game on Saturday tomorrow. Here's what he had to say in his media availability this week about C.J. Stroud.
He's really good. That team is really, really good. They had some injuries, unfortunately, but a quarterback is top tier. He's patient, has a big arm. I respect the heck out of their head coach. And they got a solid room over there. They got a lot of playmakers that they can put up a real, real numbers if you give him time and opportunity to. So probably try to contain C.J. Stroud and eliminate Joe Mixon. He's been running crazy this year. You know, we was very familiar with Joe Mixon, seen him with the Cincinnati Bengals, and we played him multiple times, and he actually beat us in a big moment, so we know he's bringing that energy over there, and we are excited to see him.
God, I wish Chris Jones played the way he talked.
I was just going to say, Seth, it's so funny you say that. I'm like, he's definitely on the list of guys whose play does not match their voice.
He sounds like a professor. And he is. Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
This guy right here is the biggest nightmare you're going to face. Just listen to him. Well, I'll tell you what. I feel like this is a difficult challenge we face this week.
I recall back in 2021 that Joe Mixon made some plays against us.
Yeah. the biggest headache with Chris Jones is that they move him all over the defensive line. Remember a few years ago, they experimented with kind of making him just an edge player. And he was doing well at it. But like really where he's most threatening is he can move all over the defensive line, and he plays well at any one of those positions. That last game, he had really good reps versus both the offensive tackles. He had really good reps on the interior. And it forces the offensive coordinator to sometimes alter the protection. And then the Chiefs' defense is really good at kind of anticipating what that protection is going to be. So, all right, if they slide to help with – if the offensive line slides to help with Chris Jones, then this is the blitz we're going to run. The players on the Chiefs defense are good at making those adjustments on the fly. And that's the cat and mouse game between Spagnuolo and Bobby Slowick. So keep your eyes on Chris Jones, and hopefully it's one of those things where, oh, I'm kind of disappointed. Chris Jones didn't really show up today. I thought Seth Payne promised me a show. But also, remember, Jones has this way of kind of cruising and then showing up in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like he'll kind of take up space. He'll be having like a nice game. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, he explodes. So you can't sleep on Chris Jones.
He makes big plays, no question. Hey, let's skip over to the Texans defense and what they're saying on the Kansas City side about that. Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid calls the plays, I believe. But Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator. He talked about the Texans' defensive front in his media session this week.
We have some different things that we like to do. I look back and just see, like, with us playing them at the end of the year and the way they were playing, going into that game, we knew what they presented. I think now when you look at that defense in general, their confidence level of how fast they're playing and aggressive, you felt that in the Chargers game. And that's been going on for a while. They're good football players. They lead the league in sacks for a reason. So if we don't respect that, that's shame on us. So we got to have different ways to do different things. And then there's going to be times where there's one-on-one matchups where our guys, I mean, we're all pros here, you know, so we got to lock down and give them respect. But we believe in our guys too. So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, the X factor, it's not even an X factor. It's the factor in this game.
Yes.
That the Texans defense has to do what really this year they've only been able to do at home, which is turn really good quarterbacks into the worst version of themselves. You go from Josh Allen to Jared Goff to Tua Tagovailoa to Justin Herbert. Those were some of the worst performances of those guys' careers. And I mean, the interceptions alone with those last three guys, what they had, 5 versus Goff, 3 versus Tua, that's 8, and then 4. 12 interceptions in 3 games from some of the best-performing quarterbacks in the league. Tua, wherever you power rank him, he doesn't typically turn the ball over a lot. So can you do that on the road? And immediately I thought, man, this is a game where, as you pointed out yesterday, there was that play where Xavier Worthy knew that the Texans defense was going to play zone because he heard them call it out beforehand. Yeah. That's the kind of advantage you get at home.
Yeah.
The Chiefs get at home that you don't get at NRG Stadium. It's a lot harder to pick up the defensive calls in a loud environment. So they got to figure out some way to recreate that magic on the road.
Yeah, you know, and I know there's a lot of Texan fans, as you bring that up, that are thinking about the previous game against the Chiefs a few weeks ago and think back to the point in the game where the Texans were up 10-7 in that game. And there was that play where it was originally called a fumble, and Henry Toa scooped it up and took it into the end zone. But there was Derek Barnett caught Patrick Mahomes His arm grazed his helmet. Yeah. Now they ended up also calling it an incomplete pass, which I thought was a bogus call. I honestly thought the incomplete pass call was even more bogus than the roughing the passer call that was there. Because Derek Barnett's trying to reach to go get the ball, and his arm happens to hit Mahomes. It wasn't a violent play at all.
It was one of those things that by the letter of the law, it's a penalty, but you see it not get called all the time.
Correct.
Look, whatever conspiracy theories there are there, that's what happens when you're playing a quarterback like Pat Mahomes. Those guys get those calls, and you just got to know it. You got to play extra clean versus them because he's going to get those calls. Going back to every great quarterback in history in the NFL, you're right. That was a play that easily, if it weren't for the officiating, could have gone the other way on both accounts.
Yeah, that's you're up 17-7 against a team that's been playing to that point. All one score games, you know, that was shaping up to be like at best a game where the Chiefs would need to probably, I know it was still kind of early, it was the first half or whatever, but the difference in that game between 17-7 and the crowd out of the game and Mahomes still having the ball, that was big at that point.
Well,
in the game.
And I think it goes to show again, like officiating theories aside and everything, that's what they have to bring.
Yeah,
even in heavier doses this week, plays like that.
That's right. What are they saying about the Texans around the national media? What are the receipts that we need to keep this time around? Because there were certainly a stack of them for that Chargers game. Rex Ryan was probably the biggest receipt. He was like the receipt you get from CVS when you buy like lotion and a contact lens solution and a bag of chips, and then the receipt is 2 feet long.
Which I've pointed out to you before, you didn't realize. There are some incredible deals on those receipts.
I've started keeping my receipts.
Don't throw them away.
Yeah, I don't. QR codes and everything else, I keep them.
Did you get like $3 off deodorant?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it is pretty good. The Rex Ryan this time around, though, Rex Ryan not really dishing out those CVS-style receipts.
Well, it's certainly not a bye week, is it? Oh, my goodness. I think Houston has a chance here. And because I'm not going to ignore what I just saw. I'm not going to ignore it. That pass rush was absolutely ferocious. And it wasn't just against the five offensive linemen. They kept chipping. Your superstar right tackle for the Chargers that I can't stand is overrated as hell. But anyway, they couldn't block them. They could not block them. And so to me, yes, that's a problem. What's the Achilles heel for Kansas City's offense? Pass protection. This team, and I get it. I know they beat them by 8 points in the regular season in a game. I get it. But they look different. For some reason, something clicked to that football team, and they look different.
All right.
At one point there at the beginning when he said, I can't ignore what I just saw, I thought he was going to say, CJ used his feet really, really well. And this team excites me. This team titillates me.
All of a sudden.
This team gets the Ryan family all worked up. Did you see CJ's feet in that game?
Well, and especially the way, even when CJ's just standing there, that his feet point to the outside like that.
Like opening up for him.
Yeah, that's like a kink probably for Rex. I kind of like the duck feet thing.
Yeah.
I mean specifically the duck feet, the 45-degree angle. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
the whole thing is definitely a kink for Rex.
Right. Look, the pundit's going to pundit. Yeah. I get that. It's the fact that the line now is, what's it up to, 9.5?
It was 9 yesterday.
It opened up at 7 or 7.5 at most places, and it's gotten wider. I don't feel that is justified given the Texans' defense.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's not like I'm not offended that the Chiefs are heavy favorites or anything, but I feel the perception is a little skewed here. Even as people have acknowledged how well the Texans played against the Chargers, I think there's a little bit of the Chiefs mystique boiled into all this.
I totally agree with that. 8.5 is the number right now. So it's kind of settled in that 8-9 range right there. We'll see what it is at kickoff. Okay, so Rex Ryan, a little more respectful. He did go on to pick the Chiefs. I don't use people picking the Chiefs when they're an 8.5-point favorite in a respectful fashion as a receipt. Receipts to me are the people that just like, they got no chance. They're laughing at the Texans, things like that. Tell me if this Teddy Bruschi take right here it qualifies as a receipt that we would need to show on Monday if the Texans win tomorrow.
They were rushing a statue in Herbert that was sitting there the whole time. This is Patrick Mahomes we're talking about. He's going to convert on every third and three where you got man coverage and those guys are rushing up the field trying to get Mahomes. He'll get out of there. That's going to be the difference. Herbert had 0 yards rushing. He did not use his legs at all. This is a different beast, that quarterback.
Okay.
This was what it was curious to me out of Brewski, because the way he was describing it, it was like Justin Herbert is a statue as a player in general, which he is not.
Definitely not.
At all. Yeah. He runs the ball really effectively. That's where I think Azeez Alshire being on the field helps a lot. He makes it difficult for more difficult for quarterbacks to run. I think Azeez on that game, if Azeez had been in the game versus the Chiefs for one, that Mahomes wouldn't have had such an easy time on that one touchdown drive of running up the middle.
100%,
I think that,
yes.
I think there's because Mahomes, it wasn't necessarily super easy yardage, especially on the touchdown run. I mean, he took a couple hits and kind of had to barrel his way in there.
He did, yeah.
It's a different animal with Azeez out there. So the Brewski painting out Justin Herbert as some kind of a statue, A, is inaccurate, and B, ignores some of the really bad plays that Justin Herbert made while running away from the pass rush in that game.
Yeah.
That one he tried to throw across his body on the Kamari Lassiter interception, he was on the move there. It was just a stupid throw.
That was a Will Levis throw, that first interception. Like, that was, what are you doing? Like,
Mahomes isn't going to make that mistake.
No.
You know, he's not going to, but you got to acknowledge that it was the Texans' pass rush that had rattled. The Texans' pass rush combined with good coverage downfield that really rattled Justin Herbert.
All right. So Brewski, I think, was just, that was a bad take on Herbert. I don't think it was.
That was a racist take.
It was
that was like, Herbert's a white quarterback.
Right. Yeah. He's a statue. Like,
he must be a statue.
Gotta
back
a statue.
In my day.
Yeah, gotta be a statue. I played with Drew Bledsoe. Yeah.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So I don't think that was disrespectful nor a receipt. Now this one, this one is a CVS deluxe style receipt. Nick Wright, our good friend, he was on Within the Loop earlier this week. This is actually from his show, I believe on FS1, where he essentially calls this the Chiefs' final practice before their regular season.
Not a bye.
Okay.
It is, however, the Chiefs' final practice of the year.
You got to go hard.
And here, I told this to Greg yesterday, and we can show you Mahomes' numbers in this round. It's very simple. LeVar Ball style, never lost. Never turn the ball over. Just crush.
That omen right here.
But here's why it's not, though. Because you don't, You don't lose a game you're not playing, and they're not playing a game. They have one final practice before their season starts. And here's how the Chiefs' seasons work. It starts in the AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
If they go 0-1 that year, they have massive changes. It's happened twice. Once they fired the defensive coordinator after going 0-1 in 2018, and once they traded Tyreek Hill after going 0-1 in 2021. If they go 1-1, win the AFC Championship game, lose in the Super Bowl, they look at the team and say which unit needs to be overhauled, and they fix it. That happened in 2020 when they went 1-1, and they changed their offensive line. And if they go 2-0, they hold a parade. And so the Chiefs really, since Mahomes has been there, they're just 7-3.
Yeah.
Just seven. They're just a 7-3 team. They've had 2-0-1 seasons, 1-1-1 season, and 3-2-0 seasons. We'll see how this one goes, but the season doesn't start this Saturday.
Yeah.
It starts next Sunday.
That makes sense.
So no, I'm not giving Houston a chance.
Okay. Well, that's
so this is in Nick's mind. This is the Chiefs versus Southeast Texas State.
Yes.
This is just a warm up game.
It's an FCS
this is just
team.
A little bit. You know what happens, Sean? Some of those warm up games.
Yeah.
Sometimes that ends up hurting you.
People get hurt
in the playoff rankings. Yeah, yeah. So all right, Nick. All right, you're taking on the team's identity to bolster your own confidence, which is we've seen this. We've seen this out of Patriots fans and media members. We've seen this out of Kansas City media members. They start to act like fans where they take on the identity of the team. They just start. That was one of the most annoying things about the Patriots run. The fans are going to be annoying no matter what when their team is really good. But it's when the media members start acting like they know more about football because the team that they cover is so good at football. They act like, well, let me explain the game of football to you. All right. I see you sitting up there on your stolen valor pedestal where you haven't actually played a damn game, but somehow you're taking on all the confidence of the team itself.
Yep.
We'll see, Nick.
This is the last one, and then we'll get to the circle of swarm. Yeah, there's a lot of people that want to shut Nick up. There are a lot of people. Paul Pierce. Okay, now, normally I wouldn't care about Paul Pierce's opinion on really almost anything, but especially football. I'm not a huge Paul Pierce guy. But I do want the Texans to win because I need him to be forced to follow through on this promise that he made on his FS1 show yesterday.
If the Chiefs lose to the Texans,
it's a miracle.
I live 15 miles away from here. I'm walking in.
That's what Paul was saying in the media room. Talking about, I'm walking
in. I'm walking in on the media. I'm walking here.
It's
I'm walking here if they lose the Texans. I'm walking here 15 miles.
They could, though.
I'm walking.
I would hate to see you have to walk.
No, that's going
to... Because coming over that 405, it's a hill. And the hill is kind of steep.
That's okay. Yeah. I'm going to get up at 5 in the morning.
Okay. It might take you longer than that.
Don't say that, Paul, because you're saying this. And right. If it happens...
I'm walking. Bro. Telling the world right now you can
listen. I'm done. Pierce said he's walking. We got you, Paul. 15 miles through a hilly part of California. How long would it take you to walk 15 miles, do you think?
I don't know, like if you're walking at 4 miles per hour, just a little less than 4 hours. It depends on how hilly it is.
Yeah, it sounds
I,
like
I
it
ran
sounds
a 50-mile like... ultra marathon once. 15 miles is just a warm-up for that.
You did a what?
I did an ultra marathon, a 50-mile ultra marathon.
How's that work? no, what's an ultra marathon? I know you didn't
walk a lot when you weigh 280 pounds. I'll tell you that much.
But let me ask you, is it like a 2-day thing? Do you stop in
No,
between?
It's a 1-day thing with a 12-hour time limit. So because it's really, the hills matter. The hills really, really matter.
Sure.
So because you're like, it was around one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York.
Okay.
It was around Canandaigua Lake. And I finished dead last. 280 pounds, and but I beat like the 25% of the people drop out because they're not gonna finish. They get blisters or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not bad. The first 15 miles, it's just like, oh, okay, this is a nice run in the park. The 30-mile mark for me was where I started to question all my decisions in life.
Oh my God, you ran the first 15 miles. When did you do this?
No, I finished them.
I heard you say you ran 15 miles and then you had to kind of stop.
No, the first 15 miles is like a warm up.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just it's kind of fun and easy. I did this in 2011 or so.
Oh, okay.
Then.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Congratulations, man.
You know what happened? Thanks.
I'm serious. Like, that's, dude.
I know. It's like, no, you know what happened was I thought I was going to, there was no way. I was doing the math in my head, which gets really, really hard the more dehydrated you become and everything.
100%.
So I was on the last 10 miles, and I'm, like, doing the math in my head, and I'm like, I'm not going to make it, man. Yeah. I am not going to make it. So this old guy that was going around, he's kind of cleaning up the course and picking up the stragglers, the people that were dropping out. And he was driving by me with, like, people in the back of his pickup with cones and stuff. He's picking up the cones from early in the race.
Yeah.
So I see him come back. And it's like seeing the Grim Reaper hovering around you. And finally, he comes. He pulls up, parks next to me when I've got about 10 miles left to go. And he gets out of his truck, starts walking towards me. And I see him, and I reach down to start to take my ankle band off, the little timer they give you. And he goes, nope, you're not quitting on me. And basically, he had already picked up everybody who was behind me on the course. And he said, this is what we're going to do. We're gonna run up to I'm going to run next to you. We're going to run up to that telephone pole up there. And then you'll walk to the next one, and then we'll run. So I started doing, I would run past two power poles, and then walk to the next one. And he would, like, drive up ahead, pick up the cones and everything, then come back, and he would pace me after that.
Dude.
And he did that for the next 8 miles.
Holy crap.
Until we get to the last 2 miles of the course, and by then it's dark out. It's getting cold because the sun's going down.
Yeah.
So, like, all the salt that was on my face was starting to run into my eyes. I could barely see. And he's like, listen, you're going to go through a park for these last 2 miles. I can't go with you, but I'll be there at the finish line. He's like, you got however much time there was left. It was like 24 minutes or something at that point, which I know a 12-minute mile sounds like no big deal. At that point, it was
end of that day.
I was 48 miles into this thing.
Yeah, dude.
And he's like, listen, you're gonna have to pick up the pace. You know, you can take a couple walk breaks, but you got to push it.
Yeah.
And so I got to the last stretch, which was the finish line was in this parking lot next to a community college, where I come up over this hill to the very edge of the parking lot, and I'm like 150 yards away from the finish line, and I can see the clock. The clock is like at 11:58 and a half or
something like
that. And I just start, so I start running, and at that point, I really started sweating.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I could barely see because there was so much salt in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like running towards the bright lights as hard as I could.
Dude.
And I ended up finishing, I think they were using, you're allowed to finish as long as you finish before 12:01, one-minute mark. Whatever it was, I ended up finishing like 7 seconds short of the limit.
Oh, my
God. And like all the people who were there were like giving me a huge ovation and everything.
You got one of the biggest ovations of the event.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was cool. All because of Barry, the old guy that paced me the last
time. Barry
is
his name. Okay, I was going to ask you. Like, you were probably having Coughlin flashbacks when that guy first started yelling at you.
No, he was cool, man. It wasn't like a hard-ass way he said it. He said it very authoritatively, like, nope, you're not quitting today.
And he's rooting
for
you.
And that, like, it clicked.
Yeah.
It was. You know what? No, it was like Coughlin or any old coach.
Yeah.
It was kind of like it just... The switch flipped immediately in my brain. I was like, oh, I'm not allowed to quit.
That guy.
And
guy was Mickey. You remember when Mickey?
Yeah.
Mickey showed Mickey's dead. Rocky's manager, he's dead. But Rocky's on the ground after getting beaten up by Tommy Gunn in Rocky V. And all of a sudden he hears, get up, you son of a bitch. Because
he had
Mickey,
like an old. He had like.
What was his name? Barry?
Barry, he had like an old Datsun pickup, you know, like a 1978 Datsun pickup, and he's just the coolest guy alive.
Guys lived
a nice
in the
letter afterwards.
Guys lived. He's done the Finger Lake life his whole life. Like he's lived in that part of the country.
Yeah.
Oh, get up, you son of a bitch, because Barry loves you. I didn't hear no bell. Oh, that's awesome, dude. Did you tumble over the finish line, or did you finish standing up? Like, I would have just
collapsed. I finished
standing
up.
Okay.
It was more the issue at that point was more that I couldn't see than anything else.
That's what it sounds like. That's cool, man. That's a cool story. I didn't know that. Congratulations. That's awesome. That's very swarmy.